The following program is recorded content created by the Truth Network.
Wake up, everyone. It's time for the Steve Noble Show, where biblical Christianity meets the everyday issues of life in your home, at work, and even in politics. Steve is an ordinary man who believes in an extraordinary God, and on his show, there's plenty of grace and lots of truth, but no sacred cows. Call Steve now at 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Or check him out online at thestevenobleshow.com. And now, here's your host, Steve Noble.
Shoot the cow, drop it off at Prime Barbecue, and turn it into brisket. That's really what I'm thinking about right now with my good friend Fred Von Cannon back in the house, who's involved with Prime Barbecue. Only eats there 2 days a week, which shows remarkable self-control, Fred. That's it. Congratulations on that. We're going to be talking about Fred's got a great announcement. Fred's been on the show many times before, ran for office before, so we're going to talk about that again. But I wanted, Fred, if I may be so bold, as to start with this. This is an article I saw just the other day, Wall Street Journal. Voters decide to make America sane again. Thank God for that. Okay, here's the second half of the article. The disorienting polarization of a seemingly disintegrating country, that's great writing, manifested itself in the wild lability by which we went from a president who tweeted inanities at 3 o'clock in the morning to a president unable to string a sentence together at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. From make America great again to pretend America is evil now. But thanks to those voters in Virginia, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Minneapolis, Seattle, Buffalo, New York, and elsewhere, the fever may have broken. In Virginia, the rebuff to the woke educational establishment in a Democratic state was a firm message from the people that, no, the lunatics won't be allowed to run the asylum. In New Jersey, voters sent a stern warning of their impatience with COVID authoritarianism. In Buffalo, citizens in large numbers patiently told their Democratic leaders that socialism wasn't the answer. In Minneapolis and Seattle, people voted to stop the police dismantling idiocy, which we'll talk with Fred about. Almost everywhere, in fact, voters signaled they would really like their representatives to focus on sane, rational policies and clean up the various messes they have helped create. And you realize as you contemplate these results and look forward to perhaps to more of the same next year, which we're talking to Fred about today, that it isn't America or most Americans who've gone off the rails these past few years. It's the American leadership class, seized of their own righteousness, convinced by their own propaganda, pickled in their own ideology, drunk on their own Kool-Aid. These so-called leaders, political, media, corporate, academic, have come dangerously close to taking the country over the cliff. Fortunately, this country is, despite the apparent attempts of some and the doubts of others, still a decent place, full of rational people repelled by all this nonsense. Perhaps democracy isn't so crazy after all. What a great article.
Yeah.
And a great way to kind of start this conversation, because Fred Von Cannon, back in the House and back running for North Carolina House District 35, which we're going to talk about, it's easy. You and I pay attention to all this stuff all the time, right? We're buried in it all the time. We're paying attention. We're busy. You got a business to run, a family, all the other stuff. But if all you do is look at social media and you look at the mainstream media, you would think that most people in America think the way that Joe Biden at all thinks. Mm-hmm. But they don't.
That's right.
We kind of live in the real world where you have a lot of normal people. I still have hope, even though it's getting more difficult.
Yeah, I think there's a same number of sane people. It's just a lot more polarized right now. But yeah, it was a line in there, drunk on their own propaganda.
Yes.
That nothing could be more accurate. It is truly propaganda. Our press is not press as constitutionally mm-hmm. envisioned. It is seriously just propaganda. And when you get people, you get the brainwashing that comes with that. And that's when you try to have a discussion with someone about COVID vaccines or, you know, the mandates, you know, well, the vaccines don't actually work, you know, so why mandate and all that? And you just get this brainwashed version of things. And it is straight propaganda. And it's hard to envision how you overcome that. And it's certainly not a one election and it might not be a one lifetime. It,
right.
it is a long game, but we can get there. I'm an eternal optimist. But right now, we are sliding down a slippery slope that we need to get off of.
Yeah. So let's talk about, obviously, you ran for NC House last time. Came shockingly close, at least from a left perspective and a numbers perspective. So let's talk about that and then why you've made the decision you've made just recently.
Well, the decision here was a little easier because of last time. I ran in a district that was quite Democrat. I think all the people that ran there, all the statewide candidates, President Trump, you know, everybody that ran in that district, probably 10 or 12 Republicans, I think everybody was losing by 8 or 9 points. It was definitely a Democrat district. Yeah. And I lost by just under 5, at like 4.9, and so did Mark Robinson. So I figure if I can hang with Mark, I'm doing something
yes,
right.
That's good.
So we did the best there. So it told me I can run a good campaign. I had a good message. And now with redistricting, it has moved into a Republican-leaning, just a few points district. So I'm thinking, well, if I ran when it was awful, I should run when it's good, right? Because nothing has changed in the reasons to run. We've got a representative right now in that Wake Forest-Rollsville area that, just for example, something near and dear I know to your heart and mind is when the Infant Born Alive bill was passed by the Republican General Assembly, went to the governor. Current governor, he vetoed it. It came back, veto override vote. We were really close, short a couple votes. It didn't pass, so the bill didn't pass. And our current representative stood up with some of his lefty colleagues and cheered.
Literally.
Cheered.
A la New York passing a law a couple years ago that you can abort right up to the moment yeah. of delivery. And if you don't know what the Infant Born Alive Act is all about, that's if let's say there's a botched abortion, because that's what it would take, and the baby's actually alive, much to the chagrin of the abortionist, that this was trying to pass a law that said the doctor would absolutely have to intervene at that point. And the governor vetoed that. And what you're saying is the Democrat that currently serves in that seat cheered.
Cheered. And so at that point, I couldn't not run.
Right.
And so it didn't matter to me what the district was, if it's winnable or not. Turns out it wasn't. But we gave it a good try and did a really good campaign, had a lot of help, a lot of supporters who, you know, are willing to stand up and do this again. And certainly, again, the stakes continue to get higher. We've got it's kind of the 3-2-1 thing you may hear as you go through campaign season. We need 3 seats in the House. 2 seats in the Senate and the 1 on the Supreme Court. And then we have the majority in the Supreme Court. We already have it on the Court of Appeals, and we'll have the supermajority in the General Assembly in both houses.
Here in good old North Carolina.
Here in red North Carolina.
Which then means Governor Cooper don't got squat.
It's the first 2 years. If you remember his first 2 years, yeah. we had supermajority. So you could pass a bill, go over, sit 10 days, he vetoed it, come right. back, and it would get passed.
Right. It's like a gumball machine.
Yeah. So it's almost like not electing a Republican governor, but getting rid of your Democrat governor for those last 2 years yeah. until we get Mark Robinson in that seat.
Yeah. This would be the same thing, though, what we hope to see happen, which I think we'll see happen November next year at a federal level, and we're going to talk about yeah, that federal versus sure. state, because I think, like I read in that article from the New York Times, talk about getting drunk on things. I think a lot of us get drunk on federal politics, get drunk yeah. on what's going on in D.C., and we don't have any sobriety about what's happening in our own backyard. We see that with the school board situation. We got a lot to talk about. Fred Von Cannon is in the House. VoteVonCannon.com. Wink and a nod. Go there, and I'm not suggesting, I'm telling. VoteVonCannon.com. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, here with my friend, brother in Christ, father and husband, successful businessman, and now back in the hunt. VoteVonCannon.com is the website, VoteVonCannon.com. That's for North Carolina House 35, which, how do we describe that kind of Wake Forest, Knightdale, that kind of no, area? Or it got moved, right, because they redistricted.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was essentially like the eastern two-thirds of the north part of Wake County.
Yeah.
Now it's the western two-thirds.
Oh, yeah.
So it has all of Wake Forest, Rollsville, but it has all of Falls Lake area up there, all the way out under Granville County, all the way out to the county line. So it's
which then flipped it from a leaning Democrat to leaning
they
Republican.
They took off some leaning blue districts and added yeah. some leaning red ones and made it a much better district.
Which, by the way, elections have consequences.
That's right.
And a consequence exactly every 10 right. years when we take a census. Okay, I'm going to get on my little soapbox here and teach you guys for a second. Why do we take the census? We take a census because we need to know where how many people there are and where they live. And once you determine where they live, then in this case, like North Carolina picked up a congressional seat up in Washington, D.C. because more people are moving here. They lost it in California. They picked one up in Texas. And so that's reapportionment. And then once you're doing that, then you got to look at the party in charge in any given state, then looks at redistricting within their own state, and they have the right to change that a little bit here and there, which is what they do. The right side does it. The left side does it. That's the advantage of winning. That's why you fight hard to win, because then you get the power. And if you get the power, then you can make changes. All right. That's the deal. That's why political parties exist. They exist to win.
That's right.
That's just the
exactly.
That's the bottom line.
That's
it
right.
is what it is. So we thank God for that. So we're going to walk through this. You had, and I titled the show today, Raising Romans, which was pulled right from the very beginning of your announcement, which I appreciate. I know how busy you are. So when you write a long post on Facebook.
Is there any other kind?
Yes, apparently not. And so I know it's going to be good. It's going to be meaty. It's going to be straight to the point. And this is Fred's got the combination that I think we need all over the country, not just in North Carolina House District 35, which is business experience and acumen, intelligence, real world experience. But also, if I can get somebody filled with the Holy Spirit, I'm all down with that. That's not necessarily the only thing I look for. You can have a Christian that's full of the Holy Spirit, loves Jesus, and I'm going to spend eternity with them that I would never want in office. In that case, this isn't the case with Fred. He's kind of got the whole package. So I'm happy to. Mi casa, su casa. So whenever you want to come in here and talk to the people, just let me know. So this post is great. When you give your kids over to Rome to be educated, you shouldn't be surprised when they come back Romans. So let's just talk with school choice and what's going on with school boards, because this is what was one of the main factors for, I think, 35% of the people that voted in Virginia to win the governorship, to win the lieutenant governorship in a former Confederate state with a black female conservative. That's Winsome Sears, and then a Hispanic attorney general. School choice, what's going on in the schools, critical race theory, all that was a huge issue. That's really how he won. Youngkin mm-hmm. won mm-hmm. because of school choice. So where do you stand on all of that?
Well, it's certainly an issue, and you've got, I think, education and several things around that are going to be huge issues nationally, but certainly local in this race. You've got school choice, which I've been a fan of from day one. You've got to have options. I'm a capitalist. I believe in the market handling things like that. Should be no different here. You should have the options. So we need to expand the opportunity scholarships, or we need to even move toward, you know.
And opportunity scholarships was put into place a couple years ago, so money for kids' school follows them.
In certain situations,
right.
there's still a limited amount of them. And where I was going is, in best case scenario, you just do that, period. You say and just make it, okay, now the market's going to win. And if you want to take them to a Christian school, you want to take them to Thales, where our kids go, you want to leave them in the public school.
Yeah, whatever.
Whatever you want to do, you've got it and you have the choice. Pure, true school choice. That's really what we need, because then that takes care of this curriculum thing, which was one of the things. It takes care of the transgendered, you know, bathroom kind of issue they had in Loudoun County too, with the sexual assault.
Yep.
If your school is that kind of school, you move them to a different school and you don't have to worry about it, right? And so we have to open up school choice. That's and if that election taught us anything, it was that. I mean, the Democrats want to frame it as, you know, white supremacy won.
Right, but white supremacy
to your point, you know, you've got a white governor, a black lady lieutenant governor, and a Hispanic attorney general. So yeah,
I hate it when the white supremacists put people of color in power.
Right? Isn't that crazy?
They do that all the time. So, such a long history of that.
And it's crazy that they call everybody a racist. Everybody's a racist. They do all right. that. And then so it moves people to vote Republican. They vote Republican. And then the Democrats' reaction isn't to get better and saying, well, we shouldn't do that. It's like, see, I told you they're not voting for us. So they're racist. Like, what?
Yeah, it's the same. That's that propaganda. They gaslight everybody. If you're against this, and it's because you're
everybody's a racist.
That's right. Defund the police. Now, we saw this happen up in Minneapolis. A couple of their city council members got beat, and people are going, look what happens.
Seattle was the biggest surprise of the whole election day
shocking.
For me. I mean, unbelievable that they took out a Republican prosecuting attorney and elected a Republican. Took out a Democrat. And elected a Republican.
That total shocker.
That's unbelievable to me out there. Because that city's gone. And there's a lot of those West Coast cities are just gone. And so if anything gave me hope on Election Day, it was that. As much Virginia to me is still purple at best, and maybe a red state.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, outside of the D.C. corridor, it is a red state.
Oh, absolutely.
And so that almost felt like people coming home. But Seattle to have that election. Oh man, there is clearly common sense would tell you, and all the surveys would tell you, it doesn't matter if it's Hispanic community, black community, white community, whatever community, no one wants to have the police gone from their community.
Right, right.
And the people that it affects the most are typically the poorer people.
Oh, the people that are in lower income areas get hurt the most because that's where the crime is highest.
And so that was always just like, what in the world are you talking about defunding the police? And that's one of the things. Every one of these issues that we are going to talk about, if you're going to hit all those, every one of them, I differ from the person that's representing us right now. He signed a pledge to defund the police. He is not for school choice. Took his kids last year in last election cycle out of a private school to put them back in public school so they wouldn't have to deal with that. But he's not for school choice. He's not for supporting the police and every other issue there that, you know, the four or five more that we hit on that announcement.
Well, especially on the school side when we talk about critical race theory. By the way, everybody, and I'm starting to do some preparation. I'm going to do a couple shows on this because there's critical theory, which is one thing. There's critical race theory, which is another. And like a lot of things, I'll take you through it and I'll show you some things that are true. Most of it is false. But in the schools right now, we're doing this to our kids. We're doing this to first graders, second graders, and third
graders. You're separating kids. How ironic or how backward is this? Here's the oppressors and here's the oppressed, and you're separating, and in a lot of these cases, they're segregating, okay, all the black students over here and whites. Like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Did we just go back to my childhood?
Reverse.
You know, back to, you know, before all the civil rights stuff? Like, what in the world? And that's their solution? That's the problem.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's people see there is enough common sense left.
Yes.
That people see it. And that is what you saw in Virginia. It's where you saw across the country. And I will tell you, I've told people from a year ago today, probably, that right after the election, I'm just telling you, 1994, Newt Gingrich, Contract with America, we took 54 seats in the House of Representatives that year. And it's the first time that the Republicans had majority in the House in over 40 years. That's going to happen again next year. There's no coming back from where Biden is. He's
controlled by
this left, the crazies, and you got Kamala as his backup plan, which she has 10% lower approval than he does. So when it comes to the elections next year, I think 50 is a target number of in the House. And here, I think we can... through more favorable districts and just a lot of tailwind, we're going to get the supermajority back in the General Assembly.
Yeah, which is what we need in order to see some progress in the right direction. VoteVonCannon.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show, talking to my brother and friend Fred Von Cannon today. Fred is running for NC House 35. He ran admirably and strong with his family just a year and a half ago and got closer than anybody would suggest. But why did that happen? Why do you think you came so close in a Democrat district? Why did it go so well?
Again, I think our message resonates. I think people are, by their nature, more conservative than not. I just believe that. And I think we ran a great campaign. We were outspent 5-1. But the reality is there's 80-some thousand people in the district, and I bet you we got to probably 60,000 of them in person, even through COVID. And I told people when we started, I may not win, but I'm not going to get outworked. And, and that's the same thing here. We've got, you know, the ability to do fundraisers, to knock on doors, to have, you know, we're going to touch everybody, and we're going to get our message out. And it was just really grassroots, a little bit of mail, but a good message, I think.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And a chance to have conversations with people that otherwise might not listen if you didn't stand in front of them.
17 straight days of early voting. I think I probably told you this. Early voting last year in October. 17 days of early voting in Wake Forest, and I talked to literally every person that voted in Wake Forest for 17 straight days. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at the other two early voting sites in the precinct, me and my opponent, plus or minus 100 votes there, I won by almost 1,000.
Wow.
So just putting in the work and just talking to people. You talk to people for 5 minutes, and they realize that just because you have an R by your name, they've been brainwashed to think that you're the crazy that hates them, that wants them to, you know, whatever, you know, all the messaging. And if you just talk to them, and that dude's he's okay.
Seems okay.
Yeah,
wow.
What he's saying, and then I had a side by side of my positions versus his positions, and it's like, oh wow. I'm not for that. I'm for this, right? And so really, a lot of times it's just educating. The good news, the bad news, I guess, for the people voting there in Wake Forest was that the lines were really long.
Oh, yeah.
The good news for me is the lines were really long.
Yeah, that's right. People are coming out.
Yeah, and they were, you know, so I could talk to somebody for 10 or 15 minutes before they got up to vote, and I had so many people, black people, white people, all, you know, come out and say, I voted Democrat, but I voted for you, you know, because I was there. I was asking for their vote. That's sales 101, right?
Man.
If I want you to
vote
for me.
You got to ask for the order.
Right? And, but I gave them a reason as well. Being out there, reason one, but giving them my position and why they should vote for me. And so I think we did a good job of that. I think we ran a good campaign. We learned a ton, and I know how to do it better now. So that's what gives me confidence. The fact that the district is probably 8 or 9 points better gives me confidence. Yeah. But the fact that I know what I'm doing now.
Absolutely.
That was my first time doing
it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that's what it takes. You got to get in there and learn, and sometimes you don't hit it out of the park in the first time at bat, but the next time at bat, you know what's coming.
Yep.
And you know how to swing, and that's what's going on. VoteVonCannon.com is the website. That's VONCANON. Okay, one N in there. VoteVonCannon, VONCANON.com. Now, listen, let me just tell everybody cards on the table, okay? Here's the way we need to play the game. The liberals and the progressives and the Democrats are really good at groupthink. As conservatives, we largely don't live like that. Fred's going to do his thing. I'm going to do my thing. We'll have dinner every once in a while. I'll see. But otherwise, Fred, go do your thing, man, and I'll do my thing. And we just kind of don't operate with groupthink. But the liberals do.
Yeah.
When it comes to something like this and needing a supermajority, if you want to be able to if you're a conservative in North Carolina, I don't care where you live. Maybe you're in Asheville listening to us right now. Maybe you're in Charlotte. Maybe you're in Winston-Salem. Maybe you're somewhere between the southern border and the northern border at Virginia. But we're all over the state. It doesn't matter whether you're in Fred's district or not. Okay, if you want to be able to override everything that Governor Cooper shuts down, then we need a majority, a foolproof majority, a veto-proof majority in the House and the Senate. And this is an opportunity to do that. This is like the Nehemiah's wall, and everybody's got a place on the wall. And just because I'm not in Fred's part of the wall doesn't mean I shouldn't help Fred when the time comes. So if you're a believer, particularly, if you're a conservative, you don't have to live here to help him. And that's the way we need to think. We need to work as a group, as a unit, and we'll talk about Veterans Day because Fred's a veteran. And so you can support that. Okay, it doesn't matter whether you live there. But especially if you live in his district, you need to be engaged. VoteVonCannon.com. And I wanted to get to this, so I'm setting the specifics aside.
Okay.
I mentioned it earlier. We're kind of drunk on Washington, D.C.
Sure.
If it's going to change, it's going to change in D.C. And I think a lot of us kind of neglect North Carolina politics or local politics. Mm-hmm. So speak to that for a minute, because I think we really need to kind of retune.
And you know, I was as guilty of that as anybody.
Yeah.
Because all my life, I got to vote for Ronald Reagan as an 18-year-old. You know, so I've been a conservative all my life. And I watch, and I just followed because I was in the Navy. I moved around and different things. And so I didn't really follow local politics. But been back. I was born in North Carolina, born in Nashville, been in the district here for over 20 years. And the more I'm here, the more I'm like, the stuff that happens in D.C. is sexy, cool, fun to watch, interesting, you know. But this is really how your life has changed a lot more with the local stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so that's why I'm more and more intrigued with that. And I think it's a big awakening for me and probably for a lot of other people is that the local politics, and that's why these municipal elections were so important.
Huge.
And you know, in a lot of these little cities, you know, town commissioners, board of commissioners, what we have in Wake Forest, the mayor, those elections are huge important, because that's where the things happen that are closest to you.
That's right.
So yeah, that's I think the Democrats do that better than us. The Democrats do that grassroots, school board, town council, that stuff. That they live that. They understand this way better than we do.
How do you think you get those kind of crazy people on Loudoun County or any other school board? That's all bottom up.
Yeah, and we're starting to get that. And once we get good candidates out there, I think the school board, you know, I think it's going to be a different thing this time around than it was last time. In the General Assembly, again, we've got 69. We just need 72. We need three to flip. There's a few that they can help with moving the district around, and it's not like they're cheating or anything. They needed to add two districts in Wake County. The proportionate meant that they went from 11 seats to 13, so they had to put an extra one up here in northern Wake and one in southern Wake. So just, you know, it's easy enough to put one here where it helped, you know, make it a Republican district. So they can, with redistricting, with better candidates, hopefully more experienced candidates, and just the tailwind that Biden and Harris are giving us at that national level, and Cooper at this level.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's going to be I think we're going to way surpass that. But that's the challenge. I appreciate you giving out the website. And you're exactly right. It doesn't matter if you live in Asheville, where I was born.
Yeah.
If you live in Banner Elk, where my family's from. If you live in Statesville, where I lived for a while. If you live Winston-Salem, Greensboro, Wilmington, Charlotte, got grandkids in those cities, wherever across the state. If you're not even in North Carolina.
North Carolina
is the most probably key state in the country.
It's huge.
And if we can flip and just neuter our governor for these last 2 years, holy What a blessing that would be.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So you can help no matter where you're at.
Yeah.
VoteVonCannon.com. All right. This one kind of torqued me off. So somebody sent me this earlier today. Take the survey about vaccine passports. Fill out the survey to tell us your thoughts on vaccine passports. Do you support or oppose vaccine passports? Then here's your three options. I support vaccine passports being mandatory to enter all facilities in North Carolina. That's choice one. Choice two, I support vaccine passports, but only for government facilities. Or choice three, I am opposed to vaccine passports being used in any situation. This was sent out by the North Carolina House Republicans, and I'm like, why do you need to bother to ask me this?
Mm-hmm.
I would like to think they already had their minds made up on this, that we would all be against vaccine passports in any case.
Well, I think a lot of times they send these out is to justify the position that they do already have. And I assume that's probably what that is just to verify what they think. But, oh, my goodness, you know, this is the thing. I've got some liberal friends that I go back and forth with.
Yeah.
And you know, vaccines, take the vaccines, take the – I'm like – why? You're selfish not to take it because, you know, you would help me if you took it. Like, well, hold on. If the vaccine's not helping you, how is it going to help you if I take a vaccine that's not right. even helping you? And if the vaccine doesn't...
Right, you better wear a cold so I don't get the flu this
yeah,
winter.
Yeah, exactly. If the vaccine doesn't work, how is it going to help you if I take it? If the vaccine works, why do I need
yeah,
to take it?
Yeah, we're talking about stopping the spread. So now we right? know that vaccine doesn't stop the spread. And so, okay, what am I doing? What does it have to do with yeah. my neighbor? No, the vaccine can help you if you get COVID. But it's you taking it's not going to help
exactly.
me.
Exactly. If that risk reward works out for you to take it
right.
because you're compromised,
your
you're older, you're obese, you've got comorbidities, whatever, you've made that decision, then take it. God bless mm-hmm. you. I'm glad they're available. But to mandate it and have this one-size-fits-all mm-hmm. type of thing, it's truly unbelievable. And then the logic and everybody goes back, well, what about smallpox and measles? Those vaccines work.
And so, those were highly deadly infectious
right,
things that
yeah,
killed people.
Instead of 99.9% survival, it was about 90% survival.
And especially
right?
when it comes to kids. I'm torqued yeah. up about
oh,
that.
Oh, my goodness.
And I just did a bunch of numbers on that because when you look at it, kids between 5 and 11 are statistically insignificant.
One in a million.
Who's dying. There's 79 deaths between 5 and 11 years of age starting in January of 2020 through the end of September this year. 79 deaths. Those are all tragic, but that's 79 out of 26 million.
And if you look into them, there's
yeah.
a ton of obesity.
With COVID. Yeah,
and,
all kinds
and
of
all
stuff.
This. There's not, I don't know if there's any that I've seen documented that were a completely healthy
right.
5 to 11 year old.
Yeah, and you have to look at those things. The life issue, you know, it's like, oh, Republicans have to be for life. That's just the way you got to check that box off. This is one of the things I deeply appreciate about you, about your wife, Anita, about your kids. About your time, your talent, your treasure. Same reason. One of the reasons I love Matthew Winslow, who's serving in the House right now, because mm-hmm. when he says he's pro-life, that's not just a moniker. That's not just something he yeah. says. He puts himself into it. You put yourself into it. And so I want to talk about that. We're going to hit the break here in a second. But this is an issue that I think there's been a lot of lip service. And that's a Republican has to be pro-life.
Yeah.
But it's like, show me your pro-life faith by what you say, and I'll show you my pro-life faith by what I do. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah,
so,
sure.
So how does this drive you as somebody that's going to be in elected office? That's my question.
Okay.
But hold your thought.
Got it.
Because that's the outro music. So we're going to talk about that when we come back. So I want to talk about the life issues so we know what's going on there. And then we're going to talk about mail-in voting and vote fraud. That's a big deal. We're going to hit on that. And then do we believe in personal responsibility anymore? Is that an issue? So we're going to talk about a couple more things with Fred Von Cannon, who just announced he's running for North Carolina House 35th District. VoteVonCannon.com. This is Steve Noble. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's Steve Noble, the Steve Noble Show. Give me an army of Bruce Lees and let me put him in office, elected office, and I'll be in pretty good shape. I've got a Bruce Lee in the studio with me right now, Fred Von Cannon, my brother in Christ and a good friend, and as well as his incredible wife, Anita. How did that happen?
Oh, that's the Lord blessed me.
Yes, he does that to us every
yes.
once in a while.
I don't know about her, but he blessed me.
People meet Fred, and then they'll meet Anita and go, huh?
I think my campaign signs, I've decided
I'm with
to
her?
Say Anita's husband, you know, when instead of having my name there,
because
that's how everybody knows me. I'm
the
introvert of the group, and so she knows everybody.
It's so funny. And then when people meet my wife, they usually just stop and pray. Oh, you're Steve's life? Let us pray.
Yeah.
So I get that. Running for a North Carolina House 35, VoteVonCannon.com. I wanted to talk about the life issue, and then we'll get into these four E's because you're going to be talking about this a lot on the campaign trail: education, election integrity, the economy, and energy. One of the things I said on the break before we went on the air, which I need to remind myself of this, is we're sitting there going, you asked this question. When we look at the left, when we look at everything that's happened in this country for the last 10 months, I mean, this is a remarkably effective presidency in just 10 months. Effective meaning quantitative, not qualitative. It's a train wreck. But they sure have created a massive train wreck in just 10 months. You go, how does that work? All these crazy ideas, they know they're going to bankrupt the country. They know we can't afford it, yet they do it anyway. And that's when I said, you know, that ideology is so strong when reality doesn't even exist. Reality doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is ideology, which, if we're going to talk as biblical Christians, that's just idolatry. Yeah. That's all it is.
This is their idea of the Great Reset, right?
Right,
this
exactly.
This is their opportunity, and I think this is the opportunity you'll see started here, continued in 22, and maybe hopefully in 24, is the Great Reset of getting them out of office. And that doesn't solve the problem, but at least makes the opportunity to solve the problem.
Yes, and that's not just a toy phrase, everybody. I'm putting a link up on Facebook Live right now. I've done a couple shows on this in the last year. I'll start doing more because President Biden just recently mentioned a partnership with the Great Reset. Now, you're going to go, is that Glenn Beck being wacky? I mean, what is that all about? No, this is real. Yeah. This is the World Economic Forum. I just put a link up here so you can go look at it for yourself. This is resetting.
With the Davos folks.
With the Davos folks. This is resetting everything, every aspect of life, not only in America, but worldwide. And, economically, socially.
It's the only explanation
government.
That makes sense of what they're doing.
Right, that's it. Yeah. So this ideology is really idolatry, and it's really powerful. The life issue, it's the default position. You're supposed to have that as a Republican, sure. But why do you have it?
There's no reason. I can't have it. I can't not have it. I don't even know how to explain it. Like, you know, life is life. And once you get your head around that, then you know that's a baby human. It just hasn't been born. Like, you know, and so we support, you know, I think every one of the pregnancy support centers here and Love Life and all those. And we just, the more you get around and the more you do that, the more you feel like this is where God wants you to be is a voice for the voiceless, right? The complete, you know, they can't speak for themselves. There's nothing they can do for themselves. They have to be cared for outside the womb and doctors that make a profit. Planned Parenthood talks about, you know, women's health. It's not women's health.
No.
It's a profit.
That's
off
all
of abortion.
Is. Yeah.
That's it. They can say they do all this stuff. It's abortion mill profit. That's what Planned Parenthood is.
Yeah, that's what it is. A murder for money.
A big donor to my opponent.
Yes, I'm sure they are. Yeah. Not a shock there. Okay, education, which we've talked about, the four E's you're going to be talking about a lot on the campaign trail. Education, election integrity, economy, and energy. Let's start with election integrity because if we don't get that right, we don't even have a representative republic anymore.
And that's one that, again, you can go kind of off the rails on and stuff. And so people ask me all the time, do you think you won? I didn't win. It was certified that I didn't. Now, do I think that if in a fair, true election, all the votes were counted, what would have happened? I don't know. I do know that that both sides, because if you go back, you don't have to go back that far to watch Nancy Pelosi and all her colleagues talking about needing, you know, that the voting machines were cheating and all that.
So it's all rigged.
It seems like this should be the most bipartisan thing that we could ever do. You're not going to go back and uncertify the 2020 election. There's people that think that Trump's still going to be, you know, putting it like whatever.
That's not going to happen.
Not going to happen. But if we could go back and figure out what happened for both sides, because you don't have to, you just go back a couple elections past that and you hear the Democrats complaining, maybe legitimately, that voting machines were switching votes and all this other stuff and all this cheating. If we're going to have faith in the election, then let's figure out how to do that. And it's 2021 in the United States of America.
Oh,
there's
no
reason we can't figure out how to have a fair election.
I got more computing power in
it's
this
crazy.
Phone than they did to put a rocket on the moon.
On the moon, exactly. So we can do it. It should be bipartisan. It just happens to be partisan to the party that lost is always the one that's asking about it. But this is something I've been talking about forever.
And constitutionally, this is the state legislature's responsibility.
That's exactly right. That's where I was going to say. This isn't in North Carolina. It's not even the Secretary of State like it is in others, and in large part the governor's out of some of this stuff, and so this is the General Assembly, period, and for you know, across the country, the General Assemblies have I think abandoned some of their role in this.
Oh, and absolutely.
Some of them are doing a good job. Some of them are doing an okay job. Some of them are just letting it go, and for whatever reason. And so I think it's something we got to look at, and I think it can be and should be bipartisan.
Yeah, and I think to audit it is just like Maricopa County, all they're doing is recounting what came in.
Yeah.
You got to back up. Like the mail-in ballot process is a train wreck.
Well, and that, I mean, just there's simple things that they've said in the, you know, when Jimmy Carter ordered an election kind of commission to figure out how to not have you know, cheating in elections. Everything that happened in 2020 is what they said not to do.
Jeez.
You know, you need voter ID. You don't need to do mail-in ballots. You don't need to, you know, have drop boxes and canvassing and all this kind of – everything that they said that was ripe for fraud is what we did. So even if there wasn't fraud, let's say there wasn't, you still don't have faith that there wasn't
right,
fraud.
That's
so
right.
You need to have elections.
It's not beyond reproach to say
everybody can believe in the election.
Yeah, so that's so important. So, yeah. You know, the assumption is we've got problems. Now we got to go figure out what they are. Because the worst case scenario is people just say, I forget it. It's all rigged anyway.
Yeah.
And then mostly the left's going to win just because we get frustrated. But no, we got to dig in and dig into that. The economy, train wreck and getting worse.
Train wreck and getting worse. Highest inflation and consumer price increase in over 30 years just this month. And it's not like you couldn't see it coming.
Right.
You can't just print trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars and then no cost.
Right. Thank you, you for whispering, Mr. President.
Right. Yeah. You know, like zero cost. Like what in the world is wrong with you? You cannot print $3 trillion and tell us that you're going to spend it on all this stuff and that there's no cost to it. It defies logic.
Yeah.
And so this is the cost of that. When you quantitative easing, you get this is the inevitable result. People have been talking about this. You could see this as clear as the nose on your face for years. It's coming and here it is.
What do we do at a state level? Because we were talking about that, the feds and all that stuff, and they have a huge impact on the economy. But what can you do as a North Carolina Republican?
Yeah, and that's tougher because, you know, the General Assembly is dealing with it right now with, you know, Medicaid expansion, Medicare expansion. I mean, like, you know, do you take some of that federal money and kind of now be dependent on the government? Because if you don't, you're going to lose it, if you know, all this. And so they make it hard. They make it hard. But there's, you know, just being good stewards of the taxpayer money at every level, that's what we need to do.
How's the economy performing generally in North Carolina?
North Carolina is probably better than I think it's in the top third. Mm-hmm. And so we've handled it okay, but still you've got, you know, a governor that single-handedly still has us in a emergency what is it called? Emergency order
for
almost 2 years. And so, and all the small businesses that shut down, you know, we have the restaurant.
Oh, man.
Thousands of restaurants across the state shut down permanently. And it's just short of criminal. It's in Durr who beat the guy in New Jersey. That's what he ran on. Like all the third of the businesses in the state of New Jersey got shut down because of that. You know, the governor just shut it
that
down.
That was just the small business. That's the trucker guy.
Yeah. And so I think it was just kind of the same thing here. You know, we've got so many businesses that have been shut down. Now, things move around. You know, they figure out something else to do. But at the same time, we've self-inflicted a huge wound that we need to take the foot off our own neck.
Yeah, no kidding. What a great point. What about energy? Is that a big issue here in North Carolina?
Well, I think just that's probably more just a general and ties into the economy. You know, when you have inflation, when you have energy prices, which sometimes are not tied to that indicator of inflation, that are going up at the rates they're going, gas prices doubled just in the last year, someone making $40,000 a year, it's now like they're making $35,000 a year. It's a tax. Reagan talked about this. It's an oppressive tax.
Very much.
It's not something that you ever voted on. You never wanted, and everybody's paying it. And
super successful people don't have to worry that much about inflation. It kills the lower level of.
That's exactly right. This is who hits it the hardest is the people that can't afford it, and that's exactly what's happening. And I think you're going to see, again, nationally, locally, statewide, you're going to see a huge, you know, pendulum swinging the other way toward Republicans because of just, you know, dinner table issues like this. You've got to be able to, you know, can we take this trip if the gas is $4.50 a gallon?
Right, exactly.
You know, well, then we got to budget. We got to take the money out of here. I mean, it is a tax.
Yeah.
It's a everyday tax, and people are already taxed enough.
Well, I remember under Obama when, you had like a $75 limit at gas stations.
Oh, yeah.
And not an F-150 at the time. I'm like, I can't even fill my truck up.
Yep.
And there's a limit, and they're running out of gas. That's real, and that hurts
and it's what they
regular
want.
Income
It's
folks.
What they want.
Sure.
They want to bankrupt energy, you know, fossil fuel energy, so that they can bring in the, you know, their clean energy kind of thing.
Which they'll bankrupt the average American. It's
unbelievable.
Yeah, and so, again, on when we talk about kind of national issues, you got to remember, when you're talking about a local Democrat, local progressive, in this case in North Carolina, House 35, you look at what they say about the national issues, that tells you who they are.
Yeah.
It identifies their ideology, it identifies their idolatry, as I was talking about earlier. And you know how they think. And then you can, you know, you can project easily enough. If I know how they think on the national issues, I now know how they're going to act on the local issues, that's the right. state issues. Yep. And that's why we got to get people like that out. Fred, great having you in today.
Steve.
Thanks again. Fred, VoteVonCannon.com is the website. VoteVonCannon, V-O-N-C-A-N-O-N, one N. VoteVonCannon.com. I've got the links up on Facebook Live. We'll do it again, of course. Mi casa, su casa. Anytime you want to awesome. Come in, just let me know. We'll be back tomorrow. A lot to talk about on Theology Thursday. This is Steve Noble on the Steve Noble Show. God willing, I'll talk to you again real soon. And like my dad always used to say, ever forward.
Another program powered by the Truth Network.